This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
I'm Philippe Cousteau from Earth Echo International, and you're listening to Out of the Blue 855 AM 3CR's Marine and Ocean News Program.
Welcome to Out of the Blue on Sunday, 14th of September, 2025.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 on your AM dial, or you can have a listen from our website, www.3cr.org.au/radioblue, from where you can stream our broadcast, and you will also find a number of previously aired episodes that have been uploaded as podcasts. You can also check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/out of the blue radio. We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land 3CR is broadcasting from and pay our respects to their elders past and present, and also to future generations.
My name's Andrew Christie from Melbourne Polytechnic and Marine Care Point Cook, and for today's episode I'm actually going to borrow from a podcast that Parks Victoria have been putting together, and they were kind enough to give me permission to use this excellent interview featuring Dr. Mark Norman and their Chief Scientific Officer, Dr. Michael Sams, of the Marine and Coastal Sciences Unit. This is an edited extract of the Closer to Nature podcast of Episode 4, which is entitled Species Behaving Badly, and features a really interesting discussion on sea urchins. Now, sea urchins are currently thriving in Port Phillip Bay, and they're an example of a native species that have gotten to effectively plague proportions in a sense. So it's important to remember they're not an introduced marine pest species. And right along the eastern seaboard of Australia, the numbers are becoming quite massive and have been really indicative of a system that is out of balance and out of whack. The ecology is certainly been compromised, I should say, to a considerable degree. And the urchins have enjoyed a huge population increase, as I was saying. So the problem with sea urchins is they tend to, when their numbers skyrocket, they tend to create what we call urchin barrens. And these are basically areas of rock or boulders that are totally bare and totally devoid of algae, and they're sometimes known as white rock, which is why there's an excellent documentary doing the rounds at the moment of the same name, White Rock, and a lot of the marine care groups and conservation groups around the state have been viewing that one and checking it out at special screenings of the event right throughout Victoria and indeed right throughout Australia. So the sea urchins are certainly near and dear to my heart. They've been a favourite research subject of mine for years. I've been trying to get a bit of a handle on what their reproductive cycle looks like, mainly in terms of what you call the morphometrics, so that is the size and dimensions of the urchins, and their what we call the gonadosomatic index, which in other words is the weight of their gonad compared to the rest of their body mass, and also trying to study when their gonads appear to be the most plump. So in other words, when they're about ready to breed, and in other words, trying to determine the seasonality of their reproductive window. I've generally grabbed the sea urchins, harvested the urchins from a spot opposite Gloucester Reserve in Williamstown. And it was only very recently that the Snorkel Sisters, they're called, they gave an excellent talk recently to the Jawbone Marine Sanctuary Care Group at the Newport Community Hub. And they spoke about the push to try and extend Jawbone Marine Sanctuary, which is the smallest marine protected area going around at only 30 hectares. It's absolutely minuscule as far as these things go. In fact, I think it might be about the smallest one in, it's definitely the smallest in Victoria. It might be Australia as well. So they want to extend it from Jawbone Marine Sanctuary, extend the coverage until it envelopes an area called the Crystals as well. And that's an ongoing issue as I speak to you today. So for decades, the Barrens have been getting more and more expansive and closer to shore. There was a great paper published a little while ago. One of the co-authors was Dr. Paul Carnell, speaking of the historical kelp populations. I think he was Deakin Uni back then, but now at RMIT. And the thing is, you get what's called the foliose canopy-forming algae. They're really easy to see from historical aerial photographs, but so too are the areas of bare rock that really stand out as well. So what the scientists have been able to do is work out the extent of the Barrens over several decades, which has given us some very, very useful info. And very clear that the area is under pretty severe stress. So being right next to the marine sanctuary, when you're out there harvesting the urchins, you're not within the bounds of the marine protected area of Gloucester Reserve, so there's no need for special permits as such. It's just the recreational fishing licence. And the Victorian Fisheries Authority have now tried to put the pressure on the urchin populations a bit by increasing the bag limits. Per person per day, they've gone from 20 up to 40, and there's no minimum size limit at all. And very easy to remove the urchins from the rock. Use a simple dive knife to knock them off the rock, pop them in the catch bag, being careful of those spines, and away you go. So the thing to remember about urchins, of course, is they're highly prized for their roe, or more correctly, their gonads, and they can be quite lucrative. So the males and females can both be eaten. Quite often, they're just eaten raw, the simplest and easiest way, and similar in that sense to how you'd eat an oyster when you get when you extract the gonads, which are a pinky, sort of a pale milky colour in the males and bright orange for the mature females. I've personally seen massive impacts of the culling exercises that have been conducted in Port Phillip Bay, mainly around Point Cook Marine Sanctuary, where I tend to frequent. And the algae has really come roaring back in those areas where the urchin numbers have been thinned out. So, in fact, very soon the Marine Care Point Cook Committee are going to be getting a presentation from Scott Breshkin of the Nature Conservancy, and that's based on ideas around citizen science monitoring of the golden kelp, which I'm very much looking forward to. The golden kelp, or Eclonia radiata, as it's often known, is a species of brown algae, one of the species most significantly affected by the increases in sea urchin numbers.
All right, we'll quickly go to a community service announcement.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
You're listening to Out of the Blue, 3CR Community Radio, 855 on your AM dial.
Anyway, onto the podcast now, and thanks again to Parks Victoria for allowing me to bring this to you today. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Parks Victoria acknowledges traditional owners throughout Victoria and pays respect to their culture and elders past, present and future. This episode of Closer to Nature was recorded at Ricketts Point on Bunurong Country and at Wilson's Promontory National Park. Wilson's Promontory is a highly significant living cultural landscape for the Kaurna Kurnai, Boonwurrung and Bunurong people. Parks Victoria respects the deep and continuing connection that traditional owners have to these lands and waters, and we recognise their ongoing role in caring for country.
Michael Sams and his team in the Marine and Coastal Sciences Unit are battling another, but this time underwater.
We're here at Ricketts Point Marine Sanctuary. So off the beach here is one of the, I think it's the second largest marine sanctuary that we have in Port Phillip Bay. You can't actually see a lot of what it is because it's under the waves, but under the waves beneath there, we've got a really amazing marine ecosystem that's protected by this marine sanctuary. So it's got about 70% of it is rocky reef that should be covered in really diverse seaweeds and macroalgae and things we call sponge gardens. So communities that are made up of animals that live attached to the rock. It's full of fish. Then we've also got seagrass beds and these kind of sandy plains that are off under the water in the marine sanctuary there.
These underwater sanctuaries are under attack from a native species that's behaving badly, It's a case of when good animals go zombie or rogue. Sometimes a native species population can be too big, and they start to damage their habitat, threaten other animals, even be a threat to their own survival.
So sea urchins have become a significant pest species, I would say, across most of eastern Victoria and here in Port Phillip Bay.
Sea urchins are the spiky round relatives of sea stars, a bit like the echidnas of the sea, but smaller. They live on rocky reefs and in seagrass meadows, protected from their attackers by their long, sharp spines. They have a special five-toothed jaw underneath their body that's really good at eating seaweeds, even entire kelp forests.
But what we've seen in recent decades is a real expansion and explosion in their numbers. So they've now become what we call overabundant. So there are too many of them. And the result of that overabundance is that they're really over-consuming the things that they like to eat, which are seaweeds, or we call them macroalgae, and kelp are the larger canopy-forming species in particular.
Before we go any further, what is kelp?
The scientific definition of kelp is they are large seaweeds that are actually in one family called the laminarians. We tend to use that a bit more loosely. So when we tend to refer to kelp, we're really talking about the large canopy-forming brown seaweeds.
Kelp is the core component of these key underwater ecosystems. If they disappear, so too will many other species.
They are the tall species, so they give the reef a really complex three-dimensional structure, which means that they're really important habitat for heaps and heaps of species that live in amongst them. So things like little sea slugs, abalone like living under there, southern rock lobster love to live in rocks and ledges and crevices that are near these species. And then there's a lot of herbivorous species, particularly herbivorous fish and things like that, which they're an important food source for. In addition to that, they have other kind of broader ecosystem benefits. So they're a plant, so they convert carbon dioxide in the water into oxygen. In areas like where we're standing here on the beach, they're really important for doing things like absorbing wave energy. So, you know, as currents and wave energy move through them, they absorb a lot of that. So they offer a lot of protection to the reef, a lot of shelter. And that shelter is also really important for a lot of species that can live in there. And there are some other benefits too. So they're also known to be, you know, carbon sinks. So they help take some carbon out of the water. And then when they die and they disappear into the kind of detritus of the ocean, they take some of the carbon away with them.
The disappearance of kelp from our oceans would be devastating. It'd be the same as every tree being cut down. There are two sea urchin species going rogue in Victoria. The first, the long-spined sea urchins, are marching around the corner from New South Wales.
And that's one that's really a range-extending species. So we found it in eastern Victoria, but eastern Victoria is a global sea surface temperature warming hotspot. And so we've seen a big expansion and range extension of that species into eastern Victoria. It's also jumped across to Tasmania as well, and causing significant problems and large barren areas created there.
This southward march is a direct impact of climate change. Waters that were once too cold for the New South Wales species to breed or survive in are now warm enough to invade. The second urchin causing problems is the local purple urchin. This species is native to southeast Australia, and it's causing big problems in Port Phillip Bay.
The purple urchin has always been here in Port Phillip Bay, a really important part of the ecosystem, but over the last 20 to 30 years, we've seen a huge increase in their numbers. They just graze on whatever they come across or they seek out with their mouths that are kind of close to the surface. You know, once they've eaten all the nice stuff, like the macroalgae and the kelp, they'll start feeding on algal films on rock, and they can scrape lots of things off. And, you know, and depending on the species, some of them will consume just about anything that's soft enough for them to get their teeth around.
Over the last 20 to 30 years, populations of the purple urchin have dramatically increased.
And once those numbers are increased, they're just not coming back down. In most places, it's actually not causing a problem, but in Port Phillip Bay in particular, for various reasons, its numbers have really exploded. It's hugely overabundant. We've got, you know, millions of urchins in the bay that are over-consuming our reef ecosystems.
When this heavy grazing or overeating happens, it forms large areas of bare rock, looking like empty concrete car parks. They're formerly known as urchin barrens.
So Urchin barrens have always been the natural part of the system, but they've been small and kind of stable and localised. But what we're really seeing is the wholesale removal. We've seen that in places like Tasmania, where they had forests of the giant kelp, which are now basically just, you know, if you see the difference, it's like going to see a rainforest and then coming back to a moonscape. They're just voracious grazers. They remove huge areas of forest. They also eat the kind of what we call the sessile animals as well, so the sponges and the soft corals that are there. So you basically go from having an ecosystem that's really diverse with hundreds of species, and basically it's gone. These barren areas have become really extensive. So the last kind of big estimates we had in Port Phillip Bay, about 60% of the bay has been turned into urchin barrens.
The reason why this happens is not totally understood.
So one of the theories that during the 80s, there were a lot of nutrients that were coming into the bay, and this led to a proliferation of one of the favourite food sources of these purple urchins, which is drift algae. And so they became really abundant, just, you know, lots of food for them around. What ended up happening is we went into a drought, and at the same time, a lot of the nutrients coming into the bay declined and went down because a lot of it was coming from wastewater treatment plants. Technology and upgrades meant that a lot less of that nutrients coming into the bay. So that, we think, led to a diminishing in their food source, but there are already lots of urchins in the bay. And so what effectively happened is that they started to mobilise and move around and seek out other food sources. And then it becomes one of those positive feedback cycles where we had lots of urchins, they're producing lots of babies, and so their populations continue to expand.
At the same time as this, Victorian waters were warming, and urchins generally prefer warmer waters. Add to this equation loss of the predators that would normally keep sea urchin numbers in check. Species like southern rock lobsters and fishes like blue-throat wrasses lost due to heavy fishing pressures.
There is evidence from other parts of the world that once you get a cycle of these urchins proliferating and become overabundant, even having healthy predator guilds sometimes can't be enough to kind of contain their numbers. So it's one potential cause. We're not 100% certain that that's the cause, but it's probably a contributing factor.
But loss is not inevitable.
We're still a long, long way from that. Like, we've got lots of, even in Port Phillip Bay, if you go to southern Port Phillip Bay and Port Phillip Heads, there's a really almost, still almost pristine ecosystem that's relatively unimpacted there.
There are three marine sanctuaries in northern Port Phillip Bay: Point Cook, Jawbone, and Ricketts Point. And each has been impacted by overabundant sea urchins.
So what we've seen at Point Cook, which was probably one of the first and hardest hit by this overabundant urchin problem, and similarly at Jawbone, is we lost extensive amounts of habitat there. So it really was converted, particularly in the case of Point Cook, into almost entire urchin barrens. And a lot of Jawbone was lost. Like, some estimates at points in time was around, you know, 90%, 70 to 90% of that macroalgal forest was lost in parts of Jawbone. Ricketts Point is a interesting example, because what we're seeing right now is the really active expansion of these urchins in Ricketts Point, but there's still a lot of really good habitat here that remains. So if you go snorkeling off where we are standing right now to Tea House Reef here in the shallower waters, you can still see great, really healthy macroalgal forests, tons of fish, great fish diversity out here. So you can see all those colourful fish that live in the macroalgae. But if you go a bit further out into the deeper waters, or if you head south down to a place called Table Rock, that's where we're starting to see really extensive urchin barrens, which have been there for a while now. And so from our perspective, why that's really important to manage is, I guess, one of the fundamental approaches in conservation is to protect what you have. It's so much harder to restore and bring back habitat once you've lost it. And we've still got great and really large expanses of habitat, which we've mapped in Ricketts Point, that we're trying to protect at the moment.
So action is being taken. The urchins can be controlled and the loss reversed.
And then we've been bringing in diving contractors there over the past 3 to 4 years. In some of those areas that we had urchin numbers reduced down pretty significantly around 2 years ago, we're seeing golden kelp basically coming back.
The diving contractors cull sea urchins and remove the heavy grazing pressure from these marine sanctuaries.
They just go in and split the urchin in half really quickly, so very quick, instant death for the urchin, and then they leave them in the park. So all of that, you know, energy and biomass that's in those urchins stays in the park system.
Michael says they've also had a lot of help from community groups in the area who sounded the initial alarm about the growing urchin populations.
So the North Port Phillip team at Parks Victoria have worked really closely with Jawbone and the Marine Care Group at Ricketts Point. So a lot of the initial urchin management activities were done with the help of them as volunteers. And so that's a way some people can contribute. Those activities do need to be done with Parks Victoria and supervised by Parks Victoria, because we're talking about a native species in our park. So we can't really let people just get out there and remove urchins. There are also other urchin species out there that aren't problematic. So people need to make sure that they know what they're dealing with.
The local community has helped Michael and his team with their vast knowledge of the area.
Like, you have people down here at Ricketts Point in Marine Care, Ricketts Point Group, who've been living and snorkeling and diving at Ricketts Point for decades and know more about the place than anyone. And they were really instrumental in identifying these problems. Exactly the same with the Jawbone group. They were some of the ones who came to us initially and spoke to us and researchers and said, hey, there seems to be a problem going on here. And that intelligence is still really vital. So that's how we've learned about where some of the really problematic areas are in Ricketts Point that we need to attack. And having those community eyes on the ground to be able to tell us, hey, this is problems popping up here again, is really valuable. Because as you can imagine, these are quite big parks. And Ricketts Point isn't a big park compared to what we have in the whole estate. But to try and dive and snorkel and see everything that's going on there is quite hard.
The work of protecting marine parks like Ricketts Point will be an ongoing task, but Michael and his team are confident they'll soon see the kelp and other seaweeds bounce back.
I've got a lot of hope, because what we've seen at Jawbone was just this really rapid recovery simply from removing urchins, and I'm expecting to see the same at Ricketts Point. The challenge for us is really just to keep the momentum going. So really hopeful, actually, that if we get these urchin numbers down, you know, in a matter of years, we could have pretty intact kelp forest back in some of these areas. And we are monitoring, like, through our science programs, all these actions, we're monitoring the recovery and how rapid that is.
Just like Ruby and her team at the prom dealing with invasive species, Michael and his team will have to manage urchin numbers for the foreseeable future.
The urchin barons aren't just in the park, they're everywhere. The urchins don't care about an invisible boundary around a marine sanctuary. It means nothing to them. So one of the challenges is that if we do a really good job in our marine sanctuaries, we still have potential for them to come move back in from outside.
At the same time, these marine sanctuaries can be critical refuges for the diversity of our native marine life. As we turn the climate crisis around, on whatever timescale that is, these marine protected areas will be key to conservation efforts. They will help seed and reseed the next generations of seaweeds, seagrasses, fishes, sea stars, corals, sponges, crabs, cuttlefish, and so much more.
So this is going to be an ongoing issue for us. Just like most of our pest management is on land, we're going to have to keep holding back the tide. But it does seem to be really effective and simple way just to get in there. So it's just about continuing those management actions and putting the resources towards doing that.
Many others are also working to help fight the impacts of climate change on kelp forests. Parks Victoria is partnering with the University of Melbourne, the Nature Conservancy, and Deakin University to develop a kelp seed bank. Samples are taken from kelp populations all across Victoria to give us a clear picture of all the kelp species across the state, their genetics, and their climate tolerances. This knowledge becomes an insurance policy. If waters get too warm, more resilient kelp varieties could be brought to places like Ricketts Point Marine Sanctuary to make sure that kelp forests persist, which will also help other plants and animals that rely on them. Australia's isolation for millions of years means that plants and animals evolved in special ways. Most Australian species occur nowhere else on Earth. This brings risk, as the native species are not well adapted to the many threats of introduced and invasive plants and animals. Climate change can further supercharge these threats, and as we've heard, can even make local species go zombie. Better understanding of our park's vulnerabilities to climate change is front of mind for park managers. Thanks for listening to Closer to Nature. I'm Mark Norman, and thanks to my guests, Dr. Michael Sams and Ruby Wicks, for sharing their knowledge with us. Closer to Nature is a Parks Victoria podcast. This episode was produced by Liz McKenzie, Ben Francischelli, Paddy Norton, and hosted by me, Dr. Mark Norman. Production and sound design by Laura Briley Newton from Audiocraft, and production support from Olivia O'Flynn, also from Audiocraft. We'd love to know what you think, so please subscribe to Closer to Nature and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts.
Now let's change the pace a bit with a song. This is Desert Rose by Sting.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio.